Hi, everybody. James Chambers here from LogiSense Corp. Here today to talk to you about the ASP.NET Web API, which has been released as part of the ASP.NET one stack kind of approach that's been taken by Microsoft. Web API, the latest bits have been released and it's available to you. We're going to talk about how you can use it inside your applications today with existing apps on different kinds of platforms, and we're going to walk through some of that here, ultimately deploying it out somewhere where you can leverage and access it from all of those different devices that you want to have a look at. So again, where does it fit in to ASP.NET? We're going to cover that. We're going to have a quick look at what it takes to spin up a project. We're going to look at a couple of different project templates that are available to us, as well as how we can actually consume the web API bits that we create, explore some of what's available to us for people who want to consume it as well. And basically, those are kind of the things we're gonna look through. We're gonna start by having this kind of look at the ASP.NET stack and just kind of remembering that there is no single product or anything that we can kind of attribute to ASP.NET. It's something that's dynamic, it's big, parts of it have matured. And along the way, as we've evolved as developers, as tools, devices have become available that can leverage more modern technologies, so too has ASP.NET evolved. And as part of what we've got in our toolkit now, in the MVC box here that we've got available, we've got MVC4, which is kind of directed towards building web clients, the actual web pages that are going to be output. We talk about that in another video in this series, so make sure you have a look at that. But we've also got the web API bits, and they kind of sit side by side with MVC4, but they're not married to it, which means you can use it in isolation. They can operate standalone and do not need to be deployed as part of an MVC site. So you can actually build out an API that doesn't expose any web pages at all, so to speak. Now, because it is part of the ASP.NET stack, we still get to leverage all of the important bits that are available in underlying inside ASP.NET. So all of those things that we're used to using as ASP.NET developers, those are all still there, and you can explore those as you move through Web API. So the first question is going to be, where do you get it? Well, super easy to get, actually, thank goodness. You just type ASP.NET/Web API. Now, it uses the web platform installer. So if you don't have the bits already on your computer that you need to start using it, it'll just pull down everything that you need. There's also standalone installers. By default, it's going to pull down Visual Studio 2012, but you can use the standalone installers for Visual Studio 2010 integration as well. Now, to get started, probably one of the easiest places to kind of look at and get started would be if you're building a read-only API. Looking at the idea of just having something that your users can consume, maybe you've got a list of videos in your video library, or you keep a collection of sheep in your backyard because you are a shepherd and you have them all named. And now you want anybody to be able to access from their mobile device, maybe Windows 8 or a web page, the location of your sheep. And so you're going to make that available through your web API. Now, any browser, anything that can consume HTTP is capable of talking to Web API. So that's one of the brilliant things about it, because even older devices that, pre-touchscreen, like we're talking like Net Arduino boards and things like that, or Netduino boards, even these things can talk to this Web API. So it's very, very accessible from other technology platforms. And that's something that you're going to find right away. We can talk to it from the browser, from Fiddler, or from any kind of application stack that supports HTTP. So as an example here, we've got a person class, which just simply has an ID and a name. In this particular instance, to create the controller, which is the only other piece that you really need to do inside your project, we're going to inherit from API controller. That gives us all the love that we get from Web API. And in this particular case, all we're doing is returning a list of people. Simply enough, just by returning that list of people, it will be serialized for us. And if the consumer is requesting, if the request is for XML, then they get XML. If it's for JSON, they get JSON. It takes care of all of that for us. We don't need to put too much effort into doing the bits for serialization over the wire. That gets taken care of for us. Now, we've got this IEnumerable that we're exposing where we're just returning everything. So there's that, we created that in that controller here on this last slide. We've got this whole list of people in our constructor here. We're just basically stuffing in a whole bunch of people. The next thing we're going to do is when you call get, i.e. the list of data, that's kind of the standard, for WAC API WAC person, the default route that's created for us using the verbs. The get will return all of the people, whereas when you pass in an ID, it's going to return a specific person. So we get very easily understandable URLs that are REST friendly, so to speak. Web API does all of this for us. Now, when I'm talking about how we go WAC API WAC person, where that comes into play is in the query string, in the request that you're making from whatever client side library it is that you're is your favorite that you're making use of. So in this particular case, all we're doing is looking at a web browser here that has API WAC person /1. Now, looking back up at our route, this is a common pattern that we see inside ASP.NET now as far as routing goes, very similar to what we would do inside of an MVC application, for example, where we've got, in this particular case, we've got API /controller/ID. So now we're going to be talking about, we're going to be making verb requests over HTTP to noun endpoints like person. We've got that optional parameter of ID on the end that allows us to do things like get versus get with an ID. Now, looking back at the browser in the query string there up in the address bar, we have API person 1. This, in theory, would return a person with ID of 1 back to the client that was making the request. Again, because that ID is an optional parameter, you leave that off the end and you get the whole list based on that controller that we just kind of looked at. So these pieces kind of map through that route template that we've got created back into the query string. You can see that illustrated a little more clearly there. Now, we have the ability here to return whatever we want for an HTTP response. The ability to create a something that's understood by, again, any client that supports HTTP is important. We need to be able to say whether or not something happened successfully, whether or not we were able to create something, whether or not a resource was not found. And here, what we can use is the generic HTTP response message to modify the response headers in order to send back a meaningful result to the client. So again, we're not having to wire up custom errors that get passed back and need to be parsed out. These aren't SOAP exceptions or some kind of XML that needs to be interpreted by the client. Rather, this is just a stock HTTP response with a little bit more information that we've got put into it. So in this particular case, as we're looking at this one, we've got a try catch on requesting a person. That ID gets passed in and we try to find it. We return the first one out of the database. That will give us an error, of course, that an exception will be thrown if that person cannot be located. And either we find it and we return an HTTP status of OK, or we don't find it, we exception out when we try to respond with that person, and we return an HTTP status code of not found. Either way, our app doesn't fall apart, and the consuming client gets a meaningful response on the other end. So if it's okay, you can fire up Fiddler by creating the default API project, a web API project. You'd be able to fire up Fiddler and actually peek in and have a look. Or in this case, here we're simply using the browser tools from Internet Explorer access by just hitting F12, and you're able to start recording the network activity, the network responses and requests that are being made, and you can evaluate them right inside the browser. In this particular case, it was able to return something valid. It was okay. We had ID of 1. With an okay response, we can see the data from the user. In this particular case, it was Chuck Norris. I'm going to pop back here really quickly, and you'll remember in our when we created the class, Chuck Norris was the first person that we created, and it's the ID of number 1 that was being returned. So back into the browser, when that request comes back, we get that Chuck Norris record serialized as JSON for us for free. So this is wonderful. All we're doing is passing in that 1, that route is being evaluated, and away we go. Next, we look at that error scenario where we were unable to find something, so we don't have an ID matching 6, and yet when we try and push the request in, we still get a valid HTTP response back. We're not, our stack isn't falling apart, we're not getting exceptions, though we're still given the opportunity to properly respond to exceptions in the form of sending a proper HTTP response back to the client, but also using whatever logging framework that we might want to make use of. The next piece, of course, though, is making a web API updatable. This is the other side of the coin where we're looking at guests, but now we're going to be looking at puts and posts to either create or update data. Now, you could imagine that Twitter, for example, which exposes its API, would be much less useful if people couldn't post tweets. Think about that. Okay, so we want to obviously be able to interact with the database, the back end, and whatnot. And we want to make this an updatable kind of API. So how do we handle that? Well, we're going to basically create another action in our controller, and we're going to have this one. In this particular case, it's a post, so we're going to be taking this new person and adding it in. You'll see that in the post. Method signature, it accepts a person object as the parameter. The parameter's name is person as well. What happens when you post a message that has the proper fields that match a person class? There's some great things that are kicked in called model binders. It's part of the pipeline, and what it does is it says, it breaks down that form or that query string or whatever the case may be that's incoming. In this particular case, it would be via form. And that when the post is interpreted, it breaks down those parameters and it looks for a matching overload on the method, in this particular case one with person, and it tries to take anything that came in any of the input variables in the HTTP request and match them up with the request, with the method signature that exists in your action corresponding to that particular method. So when somebody makes a post to the controller called person, we're expecting some data to come in that's going to match that person object. The beauty of this is, even though somebody's posting JSON out through to our web service, or to our web API method here, we still get a real .NET CLR object that we can work with without having to do a whole bunch of dancing around the serialization. So again, here, just kind of looking at this simple sample that's been created, there's a person coming in with from this example where we type in the name Jackie Chan and hit save, it's going to post that back to the server, and inside we get that reflection model binding magic that happens, and we get a fully populated person object. Now, when the post succeeds, of course, we get back right here, we're looking at the request body itself, seeing that name equals Jackie Chan. It's a simple form, URL encoded form post that gets pushed out to the controller, and whatever format we send that in that's understood by the model binders, we're going to get this populated object. So let's quickly cut to the chase here and look at what it takes to actually build out our own web API instance. So I'm just firing up a new copy of Visual Studio 2012. Again, if you go to asp.net/web-api, we'll put those links in the trailer here. But if you go to that address, you can download everything. If you do the web platform installer and you don't already have Visual Studio 2012, it's going to install the Express version for you. If you have 2012 in some variant, it's going to take update any of the templates that you've got that you may have if you had an earlier version, whatever the case may be. So it starts very simply, as a lot of things do now inside Visual Studio. We're going to hit File, New Project, pick an MVC4 application, and click OK. But we're going to select a web API application. I'm going to click OK. No other options at this point. It's just going to spin up the application for us and right away give us something that we can run. I have a, one of the great things that's happening now with the project template is that NuGet is kind of baked into Visual Studio through the Package Manager console, and there's the project template includes packages.config, and it adds all of the packages from our local cache and injects them into the project for us so that we don't need to go and wire up things like jQuery and the like right off the hop. Now, I'm going to just quickly hit F5 for you so that you can see what this does for us by default. Again, nothing too fancy here, but I do have this API link, which when we navigate to it is going to take us to a help page for the API. This is a great new feature, this automatic help feature that we get out of the web API with the latest bits. And one of the reasons that I really like it is because I can click on this API and it'll actually show me sample JSON, sample XML that I would need to invoke this request. So right away in an example of a get on the values, I get the sample coming back, the sample JSON coming back. And with the new features in Visual Studio 2012 with the 2012.2 release that you can get from ASP.NET/vnext, that is an important update for you, because when you get something like this, you can actually copy and paste the JSON objects in as a class and very easily start working with other people's APIs. Back to this though, we now have this very easy to navigate web API bits. From the ASP.NET web API help page, we can direct people to kind of a breakdown of how they can invoke any of our methods. So this is a great addition to the library and to the framework for us. Now, moving beyond that, we want to maybe have a look at how it can be used in a more realistic app, something that's not just a home page and kind of a stock set here. So I'm going to fire up an application that I just created from the MVC for sample or single page application template. So that's available simply by going through File, New, project, and from ASP.NET for application. The next piece that I would select is the template for single page application, which is right here. So I'm just going to head back to the application that I just had open. And from here, I'm going to run it, and we're going to have a quick look at this to-do list application. It's the stock template, project template that comes for single page applications. It's pretty slick. It supports multiple user registration, lets you sign in using identities from other providers, et cetera, et cetera. And in this particular case, I've got the login option, but it's my first time here, so I'm going to click sign up. And my username is James Chambers. Just type in a password, and after I sign up, that username already exists. It found me. I hit register twice, no problem. Good, it found some validation stuff. You got a preview of that as well. You can kind of break that down on your own. Hello, James Chambers. So now I've got this add to-do list up at the top, a single button. You can see my browser isn't changing, so the single web page idea is pushing out new to-do lists. If I log off and then log back in, just so that you can see this isn't vaporware at all. All that data is actually persisted for me. Now, the great thing is that even though this is just running locally, it's very easy for me to get this out to a wider audience and to make it really easily available. So we just take what we've learned with either the single page application or what we know about web API, and as we build that out and we make something that other people want to use, we can push it out either to a deployment that we've got for our corporate server or very easily out to Windows Azure, where we don't have to keep adding hardware to scale. We simply scale up our site from inside the Azure portal. Now, accessing the Azure portal is actually quite simple. You can see what I've done here. After you do a sign up, you get your free trial. It's very easy to push these sites out, and I'm going to show you that. You get 10 free sites with it. So even after your 90-day trial where you get the whole kit and caboodle, what's very easy to do is just keep using that Azure account and you get your 10 free websites. You can keep your web API application running out there in the cloud, scale it up as it gets super popular. Now, in this particular case, I've got this site pre-configured. And I'm just going to have a quick look here. What I want to do is download my publish profile. Now, I've created my site. I want to download the published profile. It's just a simple, basically a config file. It's an MS build file, actually, that you can just integrate into your project simply by calling this publish method. Now I'm running locally here, so I'll stop my project. I go into publish my application, and up here I can import my file. So I've downloaded this WebCamper website that I've created. I've downloaded the publishing profile. I simply import that, and then I select it from this dialog. Now, you can see here, all I have to do is click publish, and it's going to launch that app, push it out into Azure for me, deploy it, and the thing is going to run, and it's going to run really well. So I hope that's something that you're willing to try. It's super easy to do, and the results are immediately noticeable as far as being rewarding. The publishing profiles are based on they're the same kind of technology that we're using for when we're using WebDeploy. So if you've got WebDeploy configured on IIS, this is the same kind of idea that is being used out in Azure now. And when you set up that website and you click that download publishing profile, the site deploys beautifully for you with very little effort. So again, I'm going to go into sign up. Now, what's interesting here is because I'm using this web deploy idea, because I'm using this publishing profile, it's actually pushing out my database definition for me, but not the database itself. So the user James Chambers does not yet exist. I'm going to type in a quick password here, create the account. And just that easy, I've now got my to-do list application out running in the cloud. You can see it's up here running at webcamper.azurewebsites.net. And that's pretty much all you need to do. Let's have a quick look at how some of that is actually consumed from the client. I'm going to just really quickly pop into another copy of Visual Studio that I have running. And inside the index.cshtml file. Now this project that I'm looking at right now is actually part of the WebCamp training kit. So download that training kit and have a look at this yourself. I just want to kind of explain kind of what's going on here. Now this is kind of the function, the empty function, the anonymous function is a self-executing function in jQuery. If you're familiar with jQuery, this is kind of what you do. It's the equivalent of a body on load. It's when your page is ready to go, when all the scripts are loaded and all those kinds of things and the DOM is ready. What we're going to do is we're going to execute this getJSON call from jQuery, and we've got an anonymous function here that handles the response, and it appends a list of all of the items through. I'm going to run this here just so you have some context as to what this site in particular looks like. This is just simply a list of names. That's running. Sorry, I just had a bad request format there, but in the in this application, all it's doing is looking at a list of names. So I can add my name in here really quickly and hit the save button, and it's posting it back out. This is all just AJAX. When the page actually loads, it happens very quick, but the request is made out, and all of those names are added as list elements to an unordered list through this method right here. So up at the top, we can see here there is an empty unordered list of contacts, and then down here we do a get request or get JSON that goes into the controller and gets a list of anything that comes back out of that web API. This is all it takes right here to interact with web API, and that's what makes it super simple. If you are building an application for iOS or Android, if you're building it for Windows 8 or Windows Phone 8, then this is all it takes, is just a library that is able to talk HTTP. This asynchronous method is executed, the response is parsed, and we modify our view accordingly. Likewise, when somebody clicks on the Save Contact button on that form that we had, we get the ID and the name that the person had, and we simply use a post method to push that into the contact repository. In this particular case, this one is using kind of a fake repository. The database is not being saved. But if you look at what's happening in that single page application template, and you look at what's happening here in the training kit, you'll be able to put these pieces together really quickly and be able to deploy your site in such a way that you can scale up very easily to thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of users out on Azure simply by sliding a little bar in the portal to scale your application up. That is a really quick rundown on the web API. There's lots of bits here. There's lots of things to explore. Some complementing things that you're going to want to know about and look at are jQuery for sure. you're going to want to look at packages like using dependency injection to help compose your controllers. You're going to want Elma in there to see when things are going wrong. You're going to want Log4Net to make sure that when users start seeing errors that you know about it before they do. And these are kinds of things that you can do to make a really solid application. After that, once you've got it deployed out in the cloud, users are going to be able to very easily look at those help pages that are automatically generated for you, and they're going to be able to start consuming your service with very little work on their end. Little work on your end, little work on their end. Everybody's happy, and that's why I think Web API is pretty groovy. Give things a try. Run through it. It really starts with file new project. Pick that ASP.NET MVC template. Use the Web API template when you're creating that, and you'll be off to the races in no time. Thanks very much again. My name is James Chambers, and that was a quick look at the Web API in ASP.NET.